as we're coming into this from Feast of Dragons. We're transitioning into a new history, mm-hmm. but it's also not new.
Mm-hmm.
This is familiar. We know the places. We know the names. A lot of the names are the same, kind of, because it's like, you know, you get named after your grandma.
Like people's names?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Places definitely have the same names.
Totally.
Yeah, that'll connect you to a different time. And the people, too. It's like, I know someone named Ronald.
Right, exactly.
It's somewhere kind of down like the line. Ronald.
Right.
That's already what George does. He's like a little bit off, usually, from the thing. And then we know someone named Ronit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, okay. See what you're
doing. Are these things connected? Am I confused?
That's the thing. They are connected, right?
I think so. But I think we'll get into that. I don't know. Or we won't, because whatever. But I liked the chapter a lot, actually. A little bit more than I thought I was going to like it. Because my thought coming into Fire and Blood was, and things I've heard about it, I listened to it. I think we talked about it on the last episode. I listened to it the first time I went through it. I've never read through it. I've only ever listened to it. And so I think that's a little bit of an easier thing, or it's like, that's a different experience. And so
Sorry, go on.
Well, I had heard that this read very much like a textbook, which it kind of does. Mm. But so I was a little bit worried coming into it that it would just be a bunch of facts and it would be kind of hard to glean the vibes off of the story. But I felt like even in this first chapter, we got a couple of really cool tidbits that made me laugh out loud or that made me think or pause.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not necessarily ready for that. I think I just didn't have high enough expectations. And so it was exciting for me to get deep into this and to feel like we're back in our rhythm with it, because I think that we're going to be able to glean a lot out of the story that I just didn't get the first time around.
Yeah, definitely a different experience if mm-hmm. you read this versus listening to it.
Totally.
This is one of those books that I think it sort of unfairly feels more attractive to listen to it because of the kind of information that's being told to you,
right,
and the way that it's being told to you. Whenever I reread books that I really like, a lot of times I do the audiobooks because it's less important to me
mm-hmm.
because I've already read them. And so the mental landscape that you build without the filter of someone else's thoughts, saying words how they think that they should be said, or reading scenes in a way, or expressing how a certain character would say the word what in response in a situation where it's so open-ended, that filter is something that we would do ourselves.
Right.
And like I said, it feels a little unfair for this one because I listened to it also. And reading it like this in the style that we read with taking notes in expectation that we're going to have a conversation and we want to have stuff to say to each other mm-hmm. about it. And to those of you listening who are reading along with us, who are reading and then listening to a podcast episode, I feel like you also know going into it that you're sort of making an agreement with yourself to try to get a little bit more out of it. So it is obvious, but that confirmation bias is really apparent in this particular reread, or I guess you would call it reread, but a
sure.
first physical read for me for this book. I definitely feel it when I physically read with my eyeballs other books that I really like. I get a lot more out of it than I do from the audiobook experience. Just so much more. But like I said, I think this one is sort of, Fire and Blood, at least so far, is sort of specifically positioned to make me feel stupid for listening to it and not reading it because of those moments of where it's sort of like, I think we could probably point it toward the moments where it feels like the narrator is being unbiased, but also when there's these slices of imagery. I'm thinking of the moment where Aegon and his sisters were flying over the field of fire and looking down at the battle. Those moments where it feels like the old story, where it's less of an account and like this is a moment. And also where he's got an attitude, where George or Archmaester Gildane has a specific opinion that's obvious to see through.
Right.
And, I feel like the specialness of that stuff, you miss it with an audiobook. So I'm glad that we're physically reading it this time.
Me too.
Yeah.
You get more into the less of the overarching, this is the narrative kind of running through your head. Okay, I'm getting the key touch points of what was happening and more of those little personal moments. And there were a few, like we were both saying, sprinkled in.
Yeah, when someone's personality is getting described to you, not by some guy going,
right. It feels like you're in school a little bit when you're listening to it.
I feel closer to them whenever it's described like that. So that's cool. And I feel like we're approaching a point right now with our conversations about the story where what George has done with himself passively from writing this book, we're going to get a little bit more of that benefit. I feel like he's made Fire and Blood, and it's like he's lifting weights for writing six and seven.
Right.
It's like, okay, you have the framework so well plotted out that the decisions that you make, or rather the characters, the decisions that they make in Westeros now have even more of the connected tissue and evidence that you were giving us from people's accounts, like Old Nan in the story or the Ghost of High Heart in the story. We just have more of it now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I said, he's just more buff. He's just really ripped, more ripped than before, but he's older. So it's like a balancing act. Plus, he's a lot more popular, so there's a lot more eyeballs looking
exactly.
at him. Exactly. So, he's very intelligently lifting weight in preparation for a fight toward the end of his career.
Some might say, so are we. We're lifting weights, ready for fire for the TV show.
Lifting weights. or trying to be relevant.
I think, like you're saying, and kind of connecting another thought that I was having a little bit at the beginning was we get to be in the nitty gritty of a lot of these stories and lore and things that we've known about. There's nothing in this chapter we knew about the Field of Fire, things like that. We knew about Aegon's conquest. We knew about the dragons and all that kind of stuff. I personally haven't sat down and spent a lot of time with it because, you know, we're busy in Westeros in our time and I'm worried about Sansa instead kind of thing. And so we can also like flex our muscles a little bit and grow that base.
But why would we want to? Why would anyone want to do a thing like that?
Because it's going to make the TV show a more fun and exciting experience.
Okay.
That's why I'm doing it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I'm curious. I'm really looking forward to people sending in your thoughts because I could be totally wrong and I could be one with just a bad opinion, but I think
that wouldn't be the first
time. I am
time.
Assuming it will, and it won't be the last. I'm assuming that everybody is a little timid about this. At least that's how I feel. And
timid about the way they sort of say that they feel about it, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way.
And so
maybe
we can work it out as we go through the chapter and kind of pull out some of those human moments that we're talking about, some of those familiar moments, some of those storylines that seem exciting, even though we're still pretty far ahead. We're 80 years ahead of where the show is going to take
place,
House of the Dragon. So we have a little bit of time to catch up, but we're laying that foundation. And day one, before conquest, after conquest, we pretty much pick up.
Yeah, it cuts right to it.
Right into the midst of the conquest. We don't really get a lot of information about what was going on before, other than a couple sentences and paragraphs and highlights.
That makes sense, because Aegon's the guy, it's the focus.
Right.
But they needed to give the sort of thesis statement, not the thesis, but the really just the, whenever I reached the end of the chapter, I thought back to the start of the chapter. I forget the guy's name, which is going to be analogous for a lot of this. He's a very important person, and I want to know everything. And I like that part of, I like deep family trees of characters because it is satisfying to know why things led to other things and to also know the context of Sirius and his cousins and how they're against each
picture.
Other now.
Yeah.
But back then they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
That dynamic
being
spread out and learning about it, that is satisfying. That's fun, but it's going to be impossible to do for this book. It's going to be impossible. I can't remember the first Targaryen's name who I, like I said, sort of spiritually represented to me the vibe of what Aegon and his sisters, what it's clear to me that they're bringing to the world, not just Westeros, but to the world. And it kind of started that little itch that made them different, whether it was the dreamer seeing the prophecy, whether just listening to it, that itch, that specific itch, I think is the genius in that they just look at it differently than other people.
Totally.
Like, go on.
Well, and I like that because it's not like they were richer or more powerful or more influential because they of the Dragon Riders, because they weren't. I found that piece pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. They're just some random guys who are kind of not the best, not the worst. They're just out there. But they had this different idea.
Yeah.
And they had this different itch or realization. And they made a move that ended up completely changing the trajectory. They would have been wiped if they hadn't made that choice to go. And so I think that that's a good insight, is that they have this that set the tone, not because of money or because of power, but just because of a different way to do stuff.
Looked at it differently.
Right.
Yeah, but they not being the most dynamic or the most powerful, but being from such an ancient seat of power that has deep roots in the planet. They fail up in Westeros.
How do we, like, where do we have to be from to fail
you,
up?
You got
to
go somewhere that has just way less than what. So if you're looking for a kind of how to go into a new thing and root it out, this is like a more storied account of Machiavelli's, I forget what it's called. It's just the sort of play-by-play of the balance of power and adoration. And I think one of the most interesting elements of that was seeing the leadership of pre-existing Westeros juxtaposed with the tens of thousands of people celebrating how cool Aegon looked on the back of Beleriand in Old Town.
Right.
It's like, So all that structure that perpetuates this idea that we live in is ripe for the picking and also exciting enough for new ideas to constantly come into it to make it always better. It's like it's so attractive and exciting. That's why there's all this opportunity there. That's why the cities, that's why the Aegonfort is going to turn into King's Landing, because we all have a reason to congregate and to like expand and to inject goodness into something. So on that account, we should have all the progress and technology and all this cool stuff all the time, because
it seems easy.
Because it's so exciting. We're all here together. Look at all this cool stuff. There's so many people and all this wealth and all these rich ideas. But what you really see in this chapter is that is like the progress of it all is being halted by just old ideas that have yet to let go. They really only focus on protecting the walls that they've built. They don't try to bring in the life that I'm talking about that is attracted to it in the first place. They actually try to hold it away until the very last second. But all of these people that don't have any of the benefits of these walls having power, that just live within it, that listen to those people, they're in a position to not feel intimidated by these newcomers. They have no reason to feel intimidated by them. They're being controlled by people anyway. And you see with Harren the Black's people how little they supported him and how little help he had in the end when it came time for them to actually put boots on the ground and march against Aegon and his men when they came to Harrenhal. So why keep doing it?
Right.
I guess you can really get away with it for a long time if you get God involved. And so that part of this is going to be cool to see unfold even more specifically. But it wrapped around at the tail end and it was like, and by the way, if you thought anyone else was hypocritical, wait till we get to these guys. Like, this is the grandest city in Westeros. I saved a couple sentences. It was like, okay, I get it. It sort of beat us over the head with the high towers of the high tower, the richest and grandest city of all of Westeros, surrounded by walls and the seat of the High Septon.
That's what happens, though, when you get the bird's eye view of everything. And so you're talking about Harrenhal.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder what those conversations were actually like in and outside of the castle as he's coming, marching on. Or maybe what Game of Thrones would have been like from maybe I should just read the Spark Notes to see what that version of that is like.
That's what this felt like, by the way.
That's what it felt like, exactly.
Notes, yeah.
And so you just get a lot of the high points. So it felt like Aegon comes in so easily and just heralded by the small folk, because the guys in charge seem like they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or they're self-serving or their old ways,
right,
and nobody cares about the kind of thing anymore. Knowing that it's probably much more complicated than that in the day-to-day. But
for sure.
I think kind of like you're saying, because Aegon is the guy and the one and the guy, I guess, is all I know how to say. He's definitely going to be heralded, especially in the text about what's on with him.
Yeah, the historical account's going to be biased toward, it's not going to really talk about anything other than the success, right? Unless the shortcomings were, I guess, evident, if they gave evidence to something down the line that he made, that's going to be his downfall. Like, it would show the examples of an early mistake, really.
Right.
Like, this archmaester that George is, like, filtering this perspective through, like, I guess what you could see that situation is that he just wants to write a good book. So he needs to give, like, evidence to his ideas, basically, that he suggests.
Totally.
So whatever he says about these people, he's going to, like, give reasons to why he believes that.
Right.
And it's going to leave out all the small stuff. But it was like watching Dune. It was like we didn't need all of the conversations of, for lack of a better word, small folk. We sort of get it. We get what's happening. But in A Song of Ice and Fire, we go into those, like with Nimble Dick, we go into very specific conversations about his life. And it's a different way to draw out that greater context.
In a way we're not used to.
Exactly. But it's like way more fun to make a TV show about that, which is why House of the Dragon is going to be interesting.
A million percent,
because there's all of that.
Yes.
But you read this and there's all of that perspective still there, and there's all that potential, and there's, I still get the impression for it. And as far as the way that the small folk were, we, like I said, those conversations we didn't get leading to the battle or after, even in the aftermath of it, them being like, well, it could have been this way, and yeah, I guess I did learn my lesson. Or in the point of view of someone as they're fighting in the battle, the way that they die represents the actual shortcoming that was made them get to this point all along. That thing, I didn't really need it in every circumstance,
sure.
So it was fine.
Sure.
And the way that he wrote it to where he gave all these kings, like Arjlak, for example, the sort of fitting ends and the fitting transitions from how they, I guess, not even how they began or where they were at this point, 300 AC or 300 years before where we are in the story, the current people, the current families that hold those positions of power.
Right.
But it was enough details.
I agree with you.
Like, it was all justified. It was kind of like, I guess, just fast and so perfect. So perfectly exemplifying what vibe he clearly wanted these areas of Westeros to sort of come out with, and then why they get replaced. You know what I'm saying? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And there's a couple points that I'm thinking about on that front. The first is the North. And we spend very little time there in this chapter. But we get just a couple sentences, and he's the first guy to kneel. Or not the first guy, but he's the king who knelt.
Yeah.
And you can feel the...
I remember his name, by the way, Torrhen Stark.
It's quiet there. It's quiet in the sense we don't get a lot of the combo or the back and forth. So it's very northern kind of sternness, I feel like. I kind of got like that energy from that.
Like stoicism.
And then, yeah, stoicism. That's what I was thinking of. And then you get the eerie where the kid just like, come on in.
Yeah.
That feels so much like the vibe of the eerie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get Harrenhal with the glowing of the stone as it burns, which just adds to kind of the spooky ambiance that we already felt.
Yeah, we get the origin story
the place.
Of it mixed
right.
in with everything.
Exactly. So it's like you're saying, we have these little vignettes setting the stage for how we would eventually come to feel about these places that we've already
feel
had
that
opinions
way about.
On.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think it's a cool, simple barrier of entry into.
Yeah. Yeah.
The World of Ice and Fire, for lack of a better term, maybe better than The World of Ice and Fire. Even though I think that this chapter is like pretty much copied from The World of Ice and Fire. But anyway, neither here nor there. But I think it's a low barrier of entry. Again, something I was surprised by, because it reads like a textbook, but we get a lot of really interesting snapshots.
There's enough of that personableness, like I was saying earlier, that comes through, whether there are moments that were... They remind you like it's from the book, like it's a sort of zoomed in for a second, or it's the narrator having a little bit of sass. I think that helps the pages continue to turn.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how other chapters follow suit, because
I know that there's about to become so much more complication just
exactly.
on an interpersonal level of how people treat each other. And I got to say that in books in general, that's my least I'm least interested in that.
Yeah.
The in this case, some old guys, like how he thinks girls fight with each other is just not, I'm not having fun with that. And yeah. Even if you got it right, I just don't want to hear him fight, you know?
Right.
Just, I don't know, do something else. I don't, no offense to girls.
There's one thing that I did.
I don't want to hear guys fight either. I want to see them fight.
Right.
I want to see girls
fight too. Fight? Okay.
I want to see girls fight more than I want to see guys fight.
I was going to say, let's get our facts straight here.
For sure. That would bother me, but it would also, I would be conflicted, which that's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That was this chapter mm-hmm. in general to me. It was like, oh, wait a second. That's how these guys messed up. And then that's how you did good. So what you're telling me is, okay. All right, George. So what you're saying is, I forget the guy's first name and I wrote it down, but blank Tyrell, that just being there and being like,
the gardener guy.
Yeah.
He's like, I happen to have the keys.
I don't know if he was the gardener for House Gardener, but I know that he worked for House Gardener. Do you think he was the gardener for House Gardener? Because that would be most definitely one.
I don't know.
Either way, that would help my point. That would bolster my point. Let's say that he, I think his name was Steady, and I can't remember his name, but quick shout out to Brandon Snow. That Tyrell who was chilling when Aegon came, right? So you're telling me he's the foundation of our current Tyrell seat of power, the hordes of wealth, the political influence, the power. Let's just call it power. All the power that they have now is from this guy?
From that situation? There.
So all he had to do was be appointed, and then he was in the position, and his family then subsequently was in the position to have access to greater
power,
higher barrier of entry things that would give them greater profit. Like, they're not trying to sell stuff at a store. They're trying to sell the whole agricultural business of the Reach / anything else that they mine, instead of just being normal people that work in a library. And it's not anything special that put him in that position other than just this circumstance. And that's a sort of zoomed in statement for the larger picture of what the three of them are doing right now in Westeros.
I found the passage.
Oh, go for it.
So Aegon heads for Highgarden, hoping to secure its surrender before some other claimant could seize it for his own, because Highgarden already fell somewhere else. He found the castle in the hands of its steward, Harlan Tyrell, whose forebears had served the gardeners for centuries.
You're like, I thought he was a gardener.
I didn't.
Okay. That rules.
Whatever. I gotta learn to be embarrassed and that it's fine. Tyrell. Tyrell yielded up the keys to the castle. He's not a gardener, but he was a rando.
Yeah.
Like, he's a rando. That's the point.
He might have been a gardener, too.
The point is that he's a rando.
He did some yard work.
He got his hands dirty, yeah. Okay? So it's all good. Tyrell
watered plants.
Tyrell yielded up the keys to the castle without a fight and pledged his support to the conquering king. In reward, Aegon granted him Highgarden and all its dominions, naming him Warden of the South and blah, 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 blah. So even if he wasn't a physical gardener, the vibe still stands.
The vibe stands, and it helps.
He was just a guy who happened to be there.
Uh-huh.
Right place, right time.
So
he knelt, didn't try to do any funny business.
Yeah. I mean, and they were really fair. It's not like they were torturing people that they cared about.
They were fair every step of the way
They did not need not to be.
Dragons. Exactly.
They
I know.
Fair. They weren't scared at all.
It's so interesting to see, because we get these first couple battles. We get Harrenhal, and then we get the Field of Fire.
The Last Storm.
All of these things. Does the Field of Fire happen before or after the Starks, because it's before.
Yeah.
So they're kind of starting to hear.
They hear about it.
Winterfell,
they hear about everything.
The Eyrie, Dorne, Old Town. Everybody hears what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And they realize,
mm-hmm.
for good reason, there's absolutely nothing we can do. I kind of feel bad for those first guys who are just, we could do this. We've got 30,000 men or whatever.
Right by King's Landing. Small castles that in the contested land that no one really wanted to mess with. They're like, there's nothing here. It's kind of everybody's and nobody's at the same time. He's like, this is where we're going to do our thing.
Smart to start.
Right in it.
Because you got to flex. And the thing is right. They have dragons. So they could have burned everybody. But instead, he gave this rando. That's a really smart political move because now this rando who was just a guy, maybe a gardener, we're not sure, now has a lot of power. And House Tyrell.
And they're going to have the best crops of all.
Totally.
Because of that.
Look at what they're able to do 300 years later. And
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
So it seems to me like, and I'm interested to know if there's other points for the rest of the chapters we have coming.
I'm sure.
It feels like the point of this chapter is take everything really seriously, super serious. Wait, no. Don't take anything seriously at all. Because, what's his name? Harlan Tyrell started this whole thing. With the Tyrells.
But also take stuff really seriously.
But also take it so seriously.
Because after all these battles, all the swords get sent down the river.
Oh, so cool. That was cool. That was really cool.
This is totally random, but I'm going to read the line. As the dragons gorged themselves on the dead after Casterly Rock and Highgarden are defeated.
Preach.
Aegon commanded that the swords of the slain be gathered up and sent down river to make you know what, you know where.
Yeah.
And so there's some reverence.
That's so cool to do.
Right.
To take your thing that you were doing and then to turn that into the thing that you sit on. Just take all the stuff from that thing.
And it's
like having the right decorations in your house. Not some stuff you think people will like, but this is me.
Right.
This, like, he's got his posters on the wall.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
Right. And some of the swords are not twisted because they're the guys that gave
Torn
them to
Stark
him.
Swords, yeah.
But there are some of the swords that are just completely done
they
for.
They fought
because
too hard.
They
just wriggled around. They didn't know when to quit.
Right.
See, that's funny. There's people like Argilac the Arrogant that, I remembered his name. I liked him. But I didn't.
I was gonna say, imagine if your nickname was the Arrogant. Oof. Is that really good or really bad? You know.
I think that the point is, he's the type of person that it's like, I don't care. You know, like, I will die. Sure. Even though I know I'm gonna die, he's like, I will die. Sure, I would. I would rather just die in this fight, and I would rather other people that I know and care about die too, because I don't like you, and I don't really like what's going on. And instead of trying to keep going, he's just like, let's die instead.
He's the guy, and I know we're going to do this so much in Fire and Blood, so everyone will just have to forgive us. He's the guy who wanted to die fighting with a sword in his hand, with the curse on his lips and the sword in his hand.
He had a dozen men surrounding him at the point of the story where the story zoomed in. He'd been thrown
everywhere.
From his horse, and he was old, and he still fought like that. And that was part of the reason why between he and Harren, I liked him more, because he was the guy who wasn't totally shit to his people. He was an asshole, and he was from a time before minds like Aegon and his sisters were able to be in charge of stuff, where it was the kind of brutality and the kind of, like I said, a person who's just willing to straight up die and to not think more strategically. They were able to sandwich themselves into seats of power and keep themselves there, really, and I think that's part of what George is saying here, because of the people that laid foundations before them. Not really even because of their own strength. And then at some point, a genius idea comes to challenge that structure. And that's what we're seeing here. They did have the strength, but they also just had that mind to think differently, to go to Westeros, you know, to go to Dragonstone, to leave Ovaleria, to, you know, like, pit people against each other in strange ways.
And see that there's this body of land that is ruled by a lot of different kings, that it's volatile all the time. They're always kind of squabbling. And so... And very easy in. And seemingly so, because we get the high level view. But
what do you think he wants?
Aegon?
Yeah. I feel like we learned so much less about him.
We do, because, okay, so I was wanted to talk about this a little bit earlier, but then we started talking about other things. But Aegon, as he's described in the book as an enigma, wow, so powerful, really gets me going. One of the greatest warriors of his age, but took no pleasure in it. Humility. Never participated in tournaments because he wasn't trying to flex. He only flies on his dragon when he's going into battle or if he like has to get somewhere really fast.
Really fast. Sometimes they walk.
He has a commanding presence that drew bannermen, but no close friends. He has one friend from school.
That's a little sus.
Orys Baratheon. And then the other thing that they mention time and time and time again is that he just put on for his wives.
Yeah.
All he didn't want anything else.
They were babes, though. So, can't really blame him.
Can't really blame him.
Plus, how do you go down from them? honestly.
Especially when it's like the only other two women who are riding dragons in the whole
continent. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How do you go down from them?
But still, that one girl tried. She sent a pic 10 years a little too late.
Yeah, she did.
That made me laugh.
She literally texted him a selfie and said, "You up?"
Yeah.
And he said,
"He didn't even reply."
No, he didn't even reply. Yeah, you're right.
But time and time again, he gets all these marriage proposals. He's like, "I don't want to do that to my wives," especially in a time when everybody was out here. Even though we hear about him favoring Rhaenys over Visenya.
Is it Rhaenys or did I call her Rhaenyra earlier? It's tough.
Maybe.
Rhaenys.
Hard to say.
Hard to say.
Anyway, he seemingly has no faults.
Yeah, seemingly.
He's nice to all these guys. He gives them warning when he's about to burn their castle down. He's like, "Are you sure?" Harrenhal is like, "You're sure about that? You really want to sit in there?" And Harren is like, "Yeah, I'm good. My castle's made of stone." And then he's good on his word, burns the thing down. Yeah. But then he gives a rando, da-da-da. He is like a seemingly nice guy.
Yeah. He just thinks the Greyjoys are unfair. He's like, I don't like what you're doing.
We.
Yeah.
So do we.
Yeah. And we're like, we know what happened at Harrenhal, so you're really screwed.
Right.
Well, that's good. Was there anything that you didn't like?
About this chapter?
I want to get back to Aegon, but
oh, about Aegon.
I want to get back to him, but not about Aegon specifically. Like, is there anything that he didn't confirm for you? Because I know that there's later, like, a lot of feminism, you know?
Sure.
We were just like, yeah, he did that.
Are you trying to ask me about my feminist agenda?
No, not yet. Not yet. We'll wait till we get to those chapters. But I just mean, is there anything that he didn't go, rah, rah? Was it all obviously
There's
perfect?
One thing that I thought you would have thought that he didn't go into that I thought you would have thought would be interesting is at the very beginning when it says, "For the best part of 100 years after the doom of Valyria, House Targaryen looked east, not west, and took little interest in the affairs of Westeros."
Yeah.
You get that like one line. Who knows what the heck was going on in,
like 400?
East. For 100 years.
Yeah.
East of Westeros. Like all that kind of stuff that I feel like is... Kind of up your alley.
It would still interest me, too, because they just left, and that's where everything, like, that's
happening.
Where the world was. And this was how we see a lot of Essosian culture to them. They were the height, and so the dog eaters were in Westeros. And so it was like, it's like the Gallic to the Roman Empire. Like, we might go there. There's no need for us to go there. We have roads. And so you leave the Roman Empire, and stuff happens, but there's still the whole Mediterranean Sea and all the other stuff that's interesting about it over there.
It's been 100 years.
Yeah, but 100 years is a bit long to be focused
thinking
on.
Thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
So who knows what happened. But anyway, I read that and I thought that was something that you would be like, wow, why can't we expand on that more?
Well, I mean, I would love to have more expansion on the stuff that we want to know about. It seems like we don't get. It seems like we are getting the evidence to support why we feel like we need to feel about stuff.
But I think that I'm fine. My expectations for Fire and Blood are on the floor. And that's not a bad thing necessarily. My expectations for Winds of Winter are, there's no way they're going to be met, you know? Because it's just through.
Keep riding, George.
Exactly. And
keep
so
flexing, brother.
When we talk about stuff in Fire and Blood, whether it didn't go into enough detail or da da da. This might, my opinion might change as we get deeper into the chapters, but I just had a good time reading about
too,
it.
Yeah,
you know,
I did too.
What more do I need necessarily? And there's not a lot of, like I was saying, new information. Kind of new the bones of all this kind of stuff. The book's been out for a while.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like anything about this was necessarily surprising. But my expectations are low. I'm just here to have a good time.
Yeah, me too.
Whereas with A Song of Ice and Fire, I'm not here to have a good time. I'm here to have a scholarly time. Not true, necessarily. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
So I don't really have any expectations.
The more she shat, the more she drank, the more she
yeah.
drank.
Yeah, totally. So.
Man. What were we saying?
Everything is fun.
So Song of Ice and Fire, we get the mystery through the way vastly more artistic form of these characters having conversations and emotions with each other rather than the zoomed out one. That's cool. That's fine.
We love it.
We love it. But again, this is still just a lot of evidence. So maybe it's like if you like A Song of Ice and Fire or you like Game of Thrones, and then you go to listen to a podcast about it or to make one, you're trying to get something more out of the thing. You just want more out of the thing. This is like that.
Exactly.
This is just, you want more of the thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's a dual purpose because he got to flex that and get the muscle from publishing. Just a GRM Marillion, basically. But just specific on the Targaryens. Less about... Ooh. Sorry, buddy. Less about the planet. We still are getting... It's like A Song of Ice and Fire still in that. It's still zoomed in enough. It's Targaryen zoom. So it's still...
It's Westeros zoom.
But it's still just through the Targaryen thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's like we're still getting Westeros.
You're right.
Just like we still get Westeros from the book. Mm-hmm. But this is stuff we already know.
Yeah. Just in a new form.
We already have the feeling from it. We already kind of have like... When we were told how the Iron Throne was made, we're like, oh, okay. We kind of formed it. Had the... Just that, and that's how they got here. And then that's how, whenever the TV show started, I'm trying to think about it. Like, in a general, like, what's the most general way you could have an opinion? You go, okay, so that's why before the TV show started, they need to kill the Mad King because he was from people that came and conquered everyone and they made this big chair. And then eventually they went crazy. This kind of takes away from that a little bit because. He's seemingly so straightforward and less weird. So I guess you really have to, as you're reading this, not take everything for, not take it all word for word.
Just like in history class.
Yeah.
Because it's a bias.
Yeah, too bias.
It's a bias account of the people who won.
And I know that the stuff later is going to get.
Made by the people who won. Yeah.
It's going to get like Keeping Up with the Kardashian-y. Mm-hmm. Just because the Marchmeister Gildane wants you to think a certain way about the stuff that happened to these people when they were like this.
Right.
And then this happened.
It's going to be fun because there's going to be a lot of... It's so much easier to form an opinion or to decide for yourself what something or someone is like when you don't have a lot of information and you get just a couple bullet points. And so I think that's going to make for an interesting read because our imagination gets to fill in some of those convos. And then eventually down the line, the TV show is going to pick up on some of those when we get a little bit farther into the book.
Yeah.
And so...
Like just picking up where it left off, just borrowing from it.
Yeah.
And just making it... It's just doing the same thing, really. Just feeding back into the system, making... Just giving more context to this.
It makes me more... And exactly. And it makes me feel more and more confident in the choice to... do what they decided to do with House of the Dragon. Hmm.
Yeah, I think that I was thinking about that when I was reading it too. And if this is exercise for the rest of the books, then that could be exercise for the rest of the series, if you catch my meaning. That maybe we're all settling into a long plan with this story, or at least the people that are in charge of making stuff and also get to make money from the things that they do for it, are trying to do. Like maybe trying to establish a long thing and that this is just
a piece in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a vignette into what the greater plan is.
Right.
Maybe. If it keeps going good. Like, and it's just like Aegon's Conquest. If it keeps going good, then it might just snowball into you getting coronated.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what happened to GOT. Eventually... It was like it was causing so much noise that the lords of Westeros, the kings of Westeros, that's how old the story is, were like, ugh, who's screw this guy?
Yeah,
we need to start getting together, man.
Right.
So the Reach gets together with the Rock, and then it's like, okay, the Westerlands are here to represent. We're going to kill the shit out of these people. We have more people. We have 5,000 knights, 50,000 regular infantry. We have so much highborn vibe in this that we're going to outsmart them at the very least. And then they burn them all to death.
Right. Yeah. But then we get Dorne. You hate to see it. Loved Dorne's little vignette.
Oh, so
in this
good.
Chapter. Because I would love.
It's too good, actually.
Miria Martell.
Yeah. Yeah.
They come into Dorne, flying around. Everything's empty. Looking. They can find nothing. After, like you were saying, we already got all these guys who are marching out there doing their best. Mm-hmm. And now they fly over to conquer Dorne.
Mm-hmm. And no one's there.
No one is there. Rhaenys arrives. This 80-year-old woman is sitting there, who they call the Yellow Toad of Dorne, behind her back, I'm
assuming.
Was
it Argilac they called her that?
Yeah.
Just more color on that guy.
She's sitting there. They don't even have much of a conversation. She's like, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
And then somehow, for some reason, Rhaenys is like, okay, but we'll come back later if you're busy.
It's because no one was there. It's because they basically were like, we're going to do this so complete. Now with you just visiting, imagine how much of a pain in your ass we're going to be if you guys really want to mess with us. And plus, like, look, we're not even like showing off. Just
yeah, but burn the place down.
Alone.
Burn
That's
the whole
true.
Place
no,
down.
You're right. You're right about that.
But so it was just
but
it was
didn't,
such
because she liked her maybe.
Right. Like, what kind yeah. of powerful energy?
Yeah.
She was like, okay, well, we'll come back. And then Mirya
such a good
says,
pickup. Good thing you picked up on
says. Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah,
and then it's another
unbroken are our words.
How long
says.
Is it? He gets coordinated for the Seven Kingdoms, even though Dorne still isn't.
The second one.
The second one, yeah. right. Mm-hmm. Even though Dorne isn't part of it, and Dorne's not going to be part of it for a million more years.
Yeah.
Not really, but
it's like
just 100
more years of BS.
The whole Dorne thing, everybody else tried to flex in some way, whether it was they marched on them, or they knelt, or they sent pics of themselves mm-hmm. asking if he's up.
Yeah.
Not. Dorne, I know they all went into hiding, but she just sat there and was like, not today. And
right.
that was it. That mm-hmm. was all it took for them to leave Dorne alone, essentially.
I mean, it's a
at this point.
And that's kind of, these are, what if,
so powerful.
What if these seven kingdoms are, I forget how many points of contention there was in this first chapter, but these, what if these nodes that they're dealing with through the course of this book are like the personality traits actually of these people too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like what if it's like, if you just were like, if you didn't flex, if you didn't send your selfie, if you just chilled, then they would leave you alone.
Yeah, but
and he's like making a greater point of like showing basically these nations as having these very specific personality traits that are like what represents most characters in these books only have like a couple different like
exactly.
really specific personality traits.
It's like the vibe behind the house words.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's super cartoonish
mm-hmm.
in a lot of cases. It's way more subtle.
Which makes it fun.
It's, I don't know. It's a little boring for me sometimes. But in the book, it's so much more. I keep calling them the books, even mm-hmm. though this is a book. So that's how it's going to be from now on for me. I wrote that note on accident earlier. In the books, it's more subtle. And so it's more fun for me. But I get it. I mean, I'm not trying to be highbrow. It's just when I read it, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're that perfect. Mm-hmm.
It's a history. I mean, do you not remember? Think about in history class in high school, all the stuff you learned in history.
This is how I went to the principal's office, but go on.
Well, okay. Me studiously taking notes, and then you go to college and learn about history, and it's nothing.
Yeah.
In the textbook that I read in high school that was published in the late 80s instead
yeah.
of when I should have been
Mifflin.
Reading it. Yeah.
could never. McGraw-Hill.
Was just, like
keep going.
Was just
Tim
a couple.
Tim McGraw, Faith Hill, shout
yeah, yeah, yeah,
out.
Yeah. Is that their company?
The most powerful hyphen. No, it's not. But.
The colonists dumped the tea into the harbor and that was enough. You
yeah.
know, and that was a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, I minored in American history in school, whatever.
Uh-huh.
You like actually learn what happens and you think to yourself, wait a second, that was really annoying that they did that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think when you're talking about it's cartoonish or we're just getting, that's what we're getting is the textbook
right,
version
yeah.
that's
yeah.
meant to be read by the kids so they can buy into the whole thing.
So
which,
it's not worth me being bothered about because
you can't
that's,
be bothered.
That's part of the artistic flex of the thing itself. Otherwise, it would be boring to read.
Maybe. I mean, you could be bothered, but.
Maybe that's why the Marvel movies are cartoony. Like maybe they would be boring if they were like Dune.
No.
Maybe Dune was boring.
I think some people would say Dune was boring, but we had a good time, even though I fell asleep on accident for 10 minutes during the most crucial part.
I
but it doesn't
Dune
matter. I had a really fun time.
So I'm not smart enough to know the answer yet, but I hope that at the end of Fire
we'll
and Blood,
there.
I know
yeah.
the answer. I hope that this is like part of the lesson that George is hiding in it. A way to think about something. And I honestly kicked myself a little bit when I started reading it earlier tonight because I felt disappointed for not using this resource of knowledge that I had.
Because I was being a hater. Personally.
For not diving in deeper.
Yeah.
And getting the stuff out of it. Not the stuff about the story, but the stuff that George knows about the world
exactly.
that I don't know about.
Another look into his brain.
It's like, it's like the story itself. It's like these stories itself. It's like, I have an idea about how to be, right? But I have so much more clear of an idea now that he's like laid it out so specifically. So I hope that there's better lessons later.
Humbling.
But I hope that my life also doesn't become as complicated as a lot of these people. Although some of it sounds really fun. So
when it's summed up like that, it sounds really fun for every single one of the scenarios.
I don't know. There's some pretty crazy scenarios. Yeah.
Is it time to pick our favorite, to do our own?
Yeah, let's do Owens. And I also want to ask you, who's the best sister?
Who are you asking?
Out of
me?
Yeah.
Well, we all know who Aegon favors. Who's the best sister? Can I not answer that question yet?
Sure.
The thing I like about Visenya is she seems, they describe her as unforgiving, mm-hmm. and she has dark sister.
Yeah.
It feels menacing.
Oh, for sure.
I'm obsessed with that.
I'm kind of obsessed with her too.
Rhaenys just seems like somebody, like a beautiful, mm-hmm. also powerful.
Super powerful.
Loves to fly.
Yeah.
A little more accessible.
She's in tune.
She's a little more accessible,
yeah.
it seems like.
She's in tune.
Yeah.
She knows what's up. Probably the most confident person out there.
Aegon spends 10 nights with her for the one that Visenya gets.
And Visenya doesn't care, though.
Exactly.
That's why.
That's why I like
and
her.
And the other girl would care more.
Right. And they were like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Rhaenys might be sleeping with these other men.
Rhaenys.
I don't know. I might be saying it wrong. Might be sleeping with those men. Da-da-da. But there's no question that Visenya, even though she gets one night out of 10, is faithful. Powerful. So I guess maybe right now that would be my answer.
What's your answer?
Visenya. I don't know. That feels like, I don't know. I feel scared to like make a choice
draw
about that.
Draw your line in the sand
people,
like that?
People really care about that kind of thing.
Right,
and I
can't be friends with you, Hannah. Yeah. I'm not going to talk to you about Ice and Fire Con because you like Visenya.
Yes.
You're clearly more boring than me. Bring
I
it on.
I could be swayed. So anyway, Visenya, I love her energy. So
sorry, it's not Rhaenys, okay? Because Rhaenys is Rhaenys. It's Rhaenys. Maybe. Could be Rhaenys. It's hard. That's why the audiobook is cool.
Who's your favorite sister?
I don't have a favorite yet.
You just made me answer
yeah,
the
right.
question.
Okay. I'm going to give it to Rhaenys because what she did at the Vale was so, so good. She just swooped in and what was her name? Aaron? So, Sarah?
Pit girl. She's the same girl who sent the pic.
Oh, yeah,
of
yeah.
herself.
What's her name? Sarala?
Shara. Lady Shara. S-H-A-R-R-A.
Shara. Or Shara. Aaron.
Potato Potato.
What she did to Shara Aaron was awesome.
That's actually my own.
And Shara Aaron being smart enough to be like, I'm going to be nice about the whole thing.
Yeah.
So chill. That's... In a moment between those two people, that's what was happening in Old Town. That's what was happening at every point that the High Lords that were pre-existing, the leadership that were in Westeros before, accepted Aegon. That's what was happening. It was, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's only because it was tipped so completely in that favor.
Right.
And at the beginning of the convo, I was trying to get to that point with a bunch of different words. I was trying to get to that point. The shifting in culture and how they do things changes in the same way. Like, you have to fly in and, like, make that person change. You have to make it change. You can change it with the different ways that, what's the list? Argilac, Harren, Dorne, House Aaron, the Westerlands. The North, these different ways that led to different conclusions that mixed with the certain personality types that could probably later be planned for based on those personality types is culturally exactly the same thing that's happening to Westeros. Like these small conversations, it's like it only changes if you force it to change.
Right.
And you can change it in certain ways. But homegirl flew in and did
with dragons.
She did it sweetly.
Yeah.
With dragons.
Oh, yeah.
But
you're
she
right.
had to have dragons to do it.
But
I mean, that's a huge bomb. You're like,
I know.
It's like,
there's no choice.
It's like you walked in with like a huge gun and you're just like, hey, how you doing?
Right. There's no choice there.
There's no choice.
Back into a corner.
But it's so much better when it's nice like that. Even if that person's talking shit the moment you fly away. Like, it was kind of nice. She flew her kid around.
Can I read it? Because that's my own.
But she took her kid and took her kid into the sky.
I want to read.
I'm taking your thunder.
Those couple of paragraphs. No, you're not. I'm just going to read to play off your thoughts because that's basically how I was feeling. So I want to read the whole paragraph. So bear with me for a second.
Do it.
Shara Aaron had strengthened the defenses of Goldtown, moved a strong host to the Bloody Gate, and tripled the size of the garrisons at Snow, Stone, and Sky, the way castles that guarded each approach to the Eyrie. This is after so many other things happened, so she knew what was up. All these defenses proved useless against Visenya Targaryen, who rode Vhagar's leathery wings above them all and landed in the Eyrie's inner courtyard. When the regent of the Vale rushed out to confront her, that's cool, with a dozen guards at her back, she found Visenya with Ronald Aaron seated on her knee, staring at the dragon, wonderstruck. "Mother, can I go flying with the lady?" the boy king asked. Why is every man in the Eyrie just not good? Well, that's a whole different other conversation.
I have an idea.
No threats were spoken because they are breastfed until they're 15.
Probably. Mostly, I think the mountain, it gives them just so much more.
They have oxygen.
You know, that's better. That's funnier and better. We'll go with that.
No threats were spoken. No angry words exchanged. The two queens smiled at one another and exchanged courtesies instead. Love that. Because it's not necessarily nice. But they exchanged courtesies.
Not nice at all. Not nice at all.
The Lady Shara sent for the three crowns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Surrendered them to Queen Visenya. And it was said afterward that the little king flew thrice around the summit of the giant's lance and landed to find himself a little lord. He got to fly three times around. So puts in all the work to try to hold. Although, why would you think that you could do that when you're so high up in the sky? That's not going to help you against dragons, but do your best. All to be ruined by your weird son.
Mm-hmm.
That's my own. Too funny. Made me laugh out loud. Loved that moment.
I like when rumor was that the Targaryens never went to Westeros. And then it was like, actually, they had a painted table made.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
well
yeah.
ahead of, like, yeah. Oh. So what do they want? Maybe that's going to become more clear, too.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Still trying to find my own. I was like, oh, the notes, the things I wanted to talk about. Those things.
Well, as you're looking for it, there was interest there, and then they spent 100 years looking elsewhere until.
Okay. Keep going. I think this might have something to do with the God's Eye. Why did Harren the Black want to build Harrenhal right beside the God's Eye?
I think I misspoke because I think comes after they already moved to Dragonstone.
They did. Yeah. They did.
Yeah.
Yeah. They moved it, but so did the 100 years.
Yeah, but the table was part of the 100 years, and Aegon had the table.
Yeah, it was at the tail end of it.
Was at the
end.
He
did it like 6 years or so before
exactly.
something like that.
So there
like
was
that.
Some interest looking at it.
Yeah.
The lore, they may have been there, may have not,
right,
rumors.
So, but what if it's a deeper thing? What if what if they understood the supernatural element that we haven't really tapped into to figure out? Clearly that they had in some way figured it out in Valyria because they had access to technology that at least we don't understand. Maybe it was just high pressure, high heat smelting with volcanic glass. Who knows? And they found some way to fold that ripple-like quality into their swords as well, not just having shards of a dagger. Fine. Or there's weirder ones because there have been Targaryens that have been gifted with things like the sight and who knows what else and other people like them from Valyria.
Well, the dreamer. Yeah.
Exactly. From Valyria. What if some of them are like, you know, like the Blood Raven of the family at this point in the story, and they're interested in the supernatural, and maybe at some point, Aegon's been told about it? I don't know. I think that maybe they thought Westeros was less interesting to the potential power of the world because it was like maybe just like, oh, the terrain or the age of it, or like why hadn't it been settled? Why hadn't there been great technology? Why hadn't there had been great levels of trade that had reached it? So maybe that's why they just looked away. They just assumed that there was nothing actually hidden there, but they didn't know about the weirwoods or anything like that.
Maybe.
I don't know. There's something. I think the God's Eye is going to be. We've talked about this 100 times in the podcast, but after zooming on the moment with Harren, it's like, okay, what's going on?
There's magic elsewhere, though, not just in Westeros. So.
True. But, which is why look at Westeros? Well, if you don't know about it yet. Yeah. What if we're finding out about it now? Yeah. I just think it's suspect. And I think that stuff is going to go down. Mm-hmm. I think that we're getting more of that groundwork being laid right now.
Sure.
And maybe that's why they're interested in Westeros.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here's a known. Together, the three Targaryens watched from the sky as Aegon's army crossed the headwaters of the Blackwater Rush and raced south. I really like that. And I guess I gave an own to Brandon Snow. I also gave a shout out to Brandon Snow. I don't know what the difference is.
I don't think there is one.
Oh, shout out to Princess Maria for talking like Oberyn. She was like, tell your brother. I said that. And I was like, tell your father? I'm here. I'm going to give it to this exchange, the definitive own between Aegon and Harren the Black. Yield now, Aegon began, and you may remain as Lord of the Iron Islands. Yield now, and your sons will live to rule after you. I have 8,000 men outside your walls. What is outside my walls is of no concern to me, said Harren. Those walls are strong and thick, but not so high as to keep out dragons. Dragons fly. I built in stone, said Harren. Stone does not burn. To which Aegon said, when the sun sets, your line shall end.
And then the description of how stone doesn't burn, but
ooh,
wood
sliding.
And people and
the food
and the wool does.
Yes.
That was a really good passage.
So it's not just the structure. It's also what it takes to maintain the structure. That is vulnerable.
Yeah.
What other secrets do you have, George? Thank you for thinking of these things so I don't have to.
Right, so you can just enjoy them.
So much easier just to be like, oh, okay. That's why YouTube videos are great. You don't need to learn how food works. You're like, that's how you do it.
Yep, you can just watch it.
And then the world becomes what it is around us, everybody.
We're in it now. We did it.
This was fun.
This was great. If you have your owns, we'd love to hear them. We'd love to send them love to have you send them in.
We'd love to send your owns back to you.
Yeah.
We will not accept these owns.
Our next chapter is Reign of the Dragon. And so if you have owns either for this chapter or for our next chapter, you can send them to us in a number of different ways. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, by searching for Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com. Send in your thoughts, feelings, etc. We're doing this together. We're going to get hype for House of the Dragon. And we're in it.
And we're going to practice for A Song of Ice and Fire by the end of all this. We're going to be every little thing that happens, and we'll be like, Goldtown. Oh, Goldtown.
Right.
I know Goldtown.
Right, we've been there.
Right. We've been in Goldtown. So
I think everybody else has already been there. But it's just us.
No, they've been. They've been there. But we going to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe not. This was, I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much for hanging out and recording with me.
I'm so happy.
Another
to
reading order.
Yeah.
Started. High five. Thanks to everyone who's joining us on this reading order right now, and for everyone in the future coming to, I don't know, read Fire and Blood and remind yourself about what the Targaryens are up to. It's a good time.
The countdown to...
There's other stuff to read, but...
Is there?
Yeah.
The countdown to Fire and Blood? Nope. This is called Fire and Blood. I'm going to do that a million times. The countdown to House of the Dragon. I know we already got the trailer, but it feels like it's officially on now.
We're racing against time, folks. We got a lot of chapters to get done before then. So
good luck to us.
Good luck. And if you're reading along with us, send in owns. It's going to make the whole thing more fun. What's the next chapter called again?
Reign of the Dragon.
Okay. Well.
Now we're getting into the nitty gritty of Aegon's reign. So maybe we will hate him after next week, next time. Next chapter.
See y'all later.
See you then.